Number eight from Liszt's Harmonie Poétique et Religieuse, played by Leif Ove Andsnes. I'm Erica Wirth, and welcome to this pianist podcast. Today, I am catching up with the Norwegian pianist who has recently released an all-Liszt album for Sony Classical. Leif Ove, it's so great to have you here today on the Pianist Podcast. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Great to speak with you.
I feel that we have a special connection here because you were actually Pianist Magazine's first ever cover, issue number one.
Wow. That's
Over
right.
20 years ago. How do you feel 20 years ago? Does that seem so far away now?
It's always a mixture, isn't it? It's like you remember certain things 20 years ago and it feels like it was last year, and then there are other aspects of it which really feels like I was a different person. So it really depends on what we are referring to. It feels like a long
Yeah.
time since I was the cover boy, so that's
You've been on the cover three times actually, which is almost like groundbreaking. I think there's only like you and a couple of others who have appeared three times on the cover
Thank you.
during 23 odd years. But back then you were, looked upon as Norway's rising piano star. So maybe at the beginning, did you feel a little pigeonholed being a Norwegian pianist playing Norwegian music, or did that not ever occur?
Yeah, no, I guess it's I mean, there are certain advantages with coming from a smaller country because you easily have an identity, and you represent something, and there has been some good pianists, Norwegian pianists, but none that really made a big international career maybe. And so it was also exciting for me, and to it felt kind of groundbreaking, and it was also on a wave of the Norwegian musical life really taking off. I mean, the Oslo Philharmonic with Marius Jansons made great success. The Norwegian Orchestra had the Iona Brown coming, so we had essential people coming from abroad and showing us how it could be done. And my teacher, Jiří Hlinka, who was a Czech, came to Norway in the 70s and was very, very important for me in my development. And so there, I was. It was a very exciting time for Norwegian music life, so I'm part of a generation that saw that it was really possible to do it. Yes, of course, a little bit pigeonholed sometimes of being the ambassador of Grieg and all these kind of things. And I sometimes felt it was a bit strange because I played much more Beethoven than Grieg, but that's unavoidable. And on the other hand, I had this wonderful piano concerto which he wrote
Of
when Grieg
course.
wrote when he was 25 years old, and which is great piece for a young pianist to have. And I was
Yes.
asked to play that at the Bergen Festival when I was 17, 18 years old, and I studied it without really knowing it. I mean, I had heard the beginning, of course, but I hadn't actually heard many recordings of that, funny enough. So
Interesting.
I studied the piece from the inside and discovered the harmonies and everything which is so wonderful about that piece from studying the score, not here, not knowing
Not growing
the
up with it,
versions.
not growing up with it. How interesting. It is a beautiful piece, and I feel people sometimes maybe brush it aside. There's so much in it that.
It's a wonderful piece, and I've had long breaks away from it because especially because it was such a piece for me, which I did my debut with so many orchestras. In the first 5 years, I played it endlessly, and then I had to have long breaks. But the last 5 years, again, I'm playing it regularly. I just played it actually with the Czech Philharmonic, in the wonderful Rudolfinum in Prague, and I must say again, I just felt the potency of that piece.
Oh,
Is such a concert piece, and the
yes.
contrast between the beauty and the simplicity and the explosive character, the impatience that he had as a 25-year-old.
Yes.
He really, it's a fantastic piano
It is
piece. Really.
magical. Yeah. That slow movement is just divine, And I guess one could say the same for the Grieg lyric pieces. I mean, they are gems, aren't they? Some of them, absolute gems.
There it's for me it's a little he can be a little bit up and down, and you feel some pieces a little bit more from their time, and then there are these wonderful pieces where he just shows his signature so immediately. You hear 2 seconds, and you think, oh, those harmonies, that can only be Grieg.
Yes.
And that's really something to have that signature. There are not so many piano composers who have that. You hear that with Chopin. You hear
Yes.
that often in Schubert also, you know,
Yes.
kind of that it speaks so directly to people's hearts. And
Yes.
but to have that, and it's not Norwegian. I mean, it's he speaks to people from everywhere. I mean, I play, you know, he's a big composer in Japan or, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I've of course regularly played or now and then played his piano music, and the lyric pieces are a
Yes.
wonderful collection, and the songs by Grieg, I mean, for me
Oh.
they are maybe, you know, the his greatest achievement. And there are 150 songs, and so many of them are not well known because of the language, because most of them are in Norwegian or Danish language. So there are
Yes.
some German songs that are more done, but for
Yes.
instance, the song cycle "Haugtussa" or "The Mountain Maid," as it's translated to in English, is such a highlight. I think maybe for me it's his best piece. It's amazing.
Wow, okay. But
Yeah.
as you say, I mean, I've been looking at your concert season. I mean, you're playing everything. You know, you've done a lot of Beethoven and Rachmaninoff concertos, and now you're on to Haydn and a bit of and Debussy,
Yeah.
the Fantasy.
The Debussy Fantasy, which is a piece that I've championed for a few years, and I'm putting it together with I love that piece. It's very early Debussy, almost a student piece, but it's so beautiful. And I'm not putting it's not very long, so I'm putting it together with the Franck Symphonic Variations, which
Oh,
I've only
beautiful.
played once last year, and which I love so much. So
Amazing.
that's, is, you know, my new love. And it's not often played these days. It used to
No.
be a real popular piece, yeah. But
Absolutely.
I love that, and I think I don't know why it's not so often played these days. Maybe also it's difficult to program because it's about 15 minutes long, and
Yes.
one needs to maybe do it together with something like I'm doing with the
That's a
Debussy.
good
So
idea.
yeah, I'm looking forward to this combination.
How lovely. I mean, when I first met you all those years ago, I think I actually met you through your agent, Catherine Endicott, who I
Right.
worked with years ago. And I mean, how important is Catherine, your agent? Has she helped shape your career?
Of course. I mean, and how lucky I was to start that. I mean, I started with my local manager in Norway, who was wonderful to me. And then when I was 20, 21, I started with IMG Artists in New York. And then they were going to open up an office in London as well, and they wanted me to be part of the group. And Catherine was just she just came in from ha having worked for Lloyd Webber, and since then, since 92, we have worked together. And how lucky to just you know, as
Yes.
my first major general manager, get the best one.
Yes.
Because she really is. She has all the right instincts, and she cares so much, and she's also a tough business lady. So she has
Yes.
everything. She's
Absolutely.
and the best friend, and you know, so she understands so well how I think and how I want to plan my schedule and my year, and how I feel about repertoire and how to build that and so on. So it's often we don't have to talk about things,
That's
and
remarkable.
yeah,
Yeah,
I just
she
love
knows
her.
your mind.
Yeah, and
How
she's really good at surrounding herself with wonderful people, so the staff around her is
Yes.
always just the best, so I love working with them.
Oh, that's fantastic. It's quite rare. That's wonderful. And as you say, she's your friend as well, which is fantastic.
Sure.
And of course, you've got a strong relationship with Sony Classical. I mean, I know you started out with EMI, didn't you? Virgin Classics. Then into EMI Records, and now with Sony Classical. Been with Sony Classical quite a while.
Well, I mean, I've been very lucky with starting my career when there was a CD boom. You know, I was starting around 1990. That's when I got my contract with Virgin Classics. And all the companies were, you know, they needed reps or new digital recordings of everything. The standard reps are the the French, everything. And so there were so many opportunities to do things. I started out recording the Grieg Concerto with the list number two, and then my next recording would be Janáček piano music, and they were equally interested in everything I did. Nielsen piano music, and it was so exciting to be part of that. And then after a few years, of course, started becoming a bit more problematic. And but I have felt that recordings have really shaped the direction of what repertoire I concentrated on, and I was able to make my own projects and to go deep into some corners of the repertoire. For instance, in the late 90s, I decided, okay, now I will do Schubert sonatas, and EMI decided to do five recordings with me, with the late sonatas, coupled with songs, which I did with Ian Bostridge, and we also did Winterreise then as part of that project. And so these kind of projects have really shaped me, and I always had then a goal for working on these projects and these pieces, which would be the recording in mind. And I feel so lucky because of that, because I see many artists who have had maybe to record pieces that they were not necessarily doing so much in concert. But with me, it's always, I've been lucky to, it's kind of hand in hand. And also these days, even if it's recording business is not so commercial anyway, I'm using my recording projects as an artistic goal.
Yes, fantastic.
And find that very, very important in my life.
Yeah, absolutely. It's your life. It's fulfilling. It's all part of your musical life, isn't it? I
It
mean,
gives it, it gives really gives an it my activities a artistic direction, you know,
absolutely.
which would be more complicated to find without recordings.
Yes. And I mean, so now we turn to your latest Liszt recording, which obviously you've decided to go a little bit spiritual. You've gone to a side of Liszt. Well, it's called Via Crucis. And of course, the first half of the album centers on a piece that is not particularly well known, a Liszt work. If you
Absolutely
could
not.
talk
No.
about that particular work a bit.
It's a very unusual, odd piece by Liszt, but has its own special beauty for me. And I've known about it for years. And first, I was very confused when I saw the music and heard just a couple of recordings. And I thought, what is this? So few notes, so spare, so abstract. You know, it's really sometimes sounding like modern music. With no harmonic structure, he goes further than his son-in-law Wagner, and sort of points to the 21st century, in a way, or the 20th century for sure, you know, with
How
this
did you actually
market
come
feeling.
across it? I mean, how did you?
I've always been curious about lots of repertoire, and so with Liszt also I got curious in the late pieces and read about it and listened to it, and then I met Reinbert de Leeuw, the Dutch pianist, composer, conductor. I met him a couple of times. He was a very fascinating figure, and he loved that piece. And there's actually beautiful 1 hour long YouTube interview with him where he talks about the piece in such a beautiful way, analytical but also with such emotional depth about what it means to him, and that helped me actually in really getting passionate about the piece, meeting him and talking about it. That was
Interesting.
important. And then I met a few years ago, I talked with Grete Pedersen, the conductor of the Norwegian Soloist Choir. I've known the choir for years. We have done some projects together here and there at festivals. And I mentioned the piece, and she said, you know, actually somebody asked me to do it. And would you like to do it in Germany with me, with the NDR choir? And so we did it there and got really fascinated by the piece. We did also concert in the Elbphilharmonie, you know, huge hall, and for that intimate, you know, music. But there was a concentration and tension in the hall, which I found really special. And then we And then we thought, okay, this need to record this, and with the Norwegian Soloist Choir, which is such an amazing group, and we can work in such detail with sound and words and atmosphere. So we went for it, and here we are. And I wanted to then build recording with the spiritual list, and then combine it with some solo pieces that are maybe a bit more normal sounding list, but still belongs to that sort of spiritual world. So the six constellations and a couple of pieces from the Harmonie Poétique Religieuse.
Now, the six constellations are relatively are pieces of the young list, aren't they?
Much younger, yeah. I mean, he wrote two versions of it, but and I played the second version, but much earlier,
And which
yeah.
is interesting because people always think of Liszt as the virtuoso show off, but already when he was young, he had that incredible inner spiritual side, didn't he, from the start?
Absolutely, he had that side in him, and I find it so fascinating with even when he writes pieces like that, which are so intimate. There is a kind of great horizon about it. There's something big, a big breath, and I think it reflects his personality. It was a grand personality. Everybody who came close to him always talked about, his aura. And what I love about those pieces is also how he treats the piano so differently. So two of them, number one and four, are like hymns or psalms. They could be sung by a choir. Then the second and fifth are like Schubert songs or Chopin nocturnes with a melody and beautiful central accompaniment. And the famous one, number three, is of course more like a landscape, impressionistic painting. It doesn't move a lot around. And then the sixth is the only one where he's a bit more flamboyant and allows himself to be a virtuoso.
Oh, they're gems, and
They
of
are
course.
fantastically beautiful, and I think they are so beautiful as a cycle because they are different as well. I
Do
love
you play them
them.
as a cycle? Do you play them all together?
Sometimes, and I will actually also next season, yeah.
And then, of course, you round off the album with numbers 8 and 9 from Harmonie Poétique et Religieuse, also going back very holy. And it's interesting that you place number 8 after number 9, right?
Yeah,
You
I
end
wanted
with number
to.
eight.
Yes, yeah. Number nine is Andante Lacrimoso, which is a little bit longer, broader piece, full of sorrow and feeling of pain and intimacy and introverts. Also, I think reflects how Liszt was improvising at the keyboard. He's just sitting down, playing a few chords, and from there it grows. He was such a famous improviser, of course. The last piece, number eight, is the piece in memory of Palestrina. So it just begins with this kind of chant, which you can imagine the monks in the monastery, and which brings us back to the beginning of the Via Crucis, which is at the beginning of the record, which is a Gregorian chant. And so I thought that was interesting and nice to m make that arch. And then what is wonderful with the Palestrina piece is that after the first introduction with this chant, it sort of erupts into this romantic intensity of arpeggios and flourishes with the same theme, and which has Liszt all over it, his signature. And it was wonderful after the intimacy of this recording, which doesn't have so many notes, especially in the Via Crucis, to finish off with that, with actually lots of notes and waterfalls of these kind of chordal arpeggios. It's kind of liberating. So that's why I put it at the end.
Fantastic. Have you ever, talking of Via Crucis, have you ever tried, I believe it's in three versions. There's also a solo piano version.
Yeah, there's a solo version, and I'm not sh well, I would be curious to see how it wants to play it as just a solo, but of course it's even more abstract, and it's already a very ab abstract piece.
Absolutely.
But I'm thinking at least of playing sometimes movements of it, because there are very haunting piano solo movements. I mean, a lot of the piece is piano solo. The funny thing about it is that it's with choir and piano, but we have rarely actually playing or singing together. It's either the choir or the piano. So I'm very often commenting on the story being told by the choir. And then there are these magical solo moments. For instance, the one where after Jesus dies, when they take the clothes of the corpse, and just this kind of
Oh,
layers
yes.
of, oh, it's so mystical and so wonderful. So some of these moments maybe are also wonderful to play on their own as part of a half of list pieces in general, you know, in a
Yes.
recital.
Yes, I haven't heard them in their solo. Yeah. Cool.
I mean, I think the solo pieces are as they are written also, you know, with the
Yes.
when one plays with the choir, and then it's quite a pure transcription of the choir parts also for piano solo.
Okay. Well, sounds like a wonderful album. I'm sure lots of people will enjoy listening to it. And so going on to this summer, which is not far away, we believe it's your final edition of the Rosendahl Chamber Music Festival. Which you've been founder and artistic director. That's quite sad, no? Or you feel it's come naturally to a conclusion?
For me, it has, because it has been a process, thinking about how long I should do it. A lot of my life I've been running festivals. I was involved in a research chamber music festival for 17 years, actually. And then when I became father, when I was 40, I thought, oh, now I need to be, you know, not have a festival. And then after a few years again, I got tempted to start anew. And now it's been 10 years with the Rosendahl Chamber Music Festival, and it's been wonderful. But it takes quite a lot of time during the year, and the summers always have that focus, especially. And I just feel now that I need some time, you know, for other things. And
Yes.
but of course, I'm curious how it's going to feel, because I have been curating programs most of my life for festivals. So
Fantastic.
we'll see. But I think it's time. And I also have this feeling that one shouldn't just go on doing this kind of festivals till one gets a bit tired. It's better to stop before it's declining a bit. And we had such a peak of the festival last year. We had a wonderful festival, and I just that maybe think even more, okay, now it's okay to stop, actually, because so we'll do one more, and I think it will be wonderful this summer. And it's not finished with me and the place at the Barony in Rosendahl, because I'm going to be advisor for a concert series which starts in 2026. So, and I will
Okay.
play there once every summer. So there will be a couple of weekends where when classical music audience can go and have some wonderful programs, though not a bigger festival like we've had.
It sounds wonderful. I've never managed to get there, though I'm going to try my hardest this August.
Yeah, or later, well, when we have the classical series, it's a wonderful
Yeah.
place to visit in any case. Yeah.
I'm sure. I've been to Bergen once to visit Grieg's house.
Right. It's not so far from Bergen. It takes with a boat. You have to catch the boat, which is just twice a day, but then it's only 1.5 hour with boat. So it's not
Wonderful.
very far. Yeah.
Wonderful. Okay, so I feel I'm having a really lovely conversation with you. So it seems funny to ask you some rather light-hearted questions here.
Oh,
And
that's
I
nice.
just thought I'd throw them out there to you. So here we go. There's about four, six of them. Le Fauve, if you could play only one composer from now on, who would it
Oh, is that a light-hearted question?
Actually, it's really silly, isn't it?
It's a very serious question. I think Beethoven. You know, because of the range of the piano music and what he represents in my life, that I just need him regularly.
Oh, the sonatas, the concertos, everything, the chamber music.
Everything, and emotionally, he's just there. He holds your hand, and you know, thus it's going to be okay. You know, there's such a strength in that music and such a comfort.
Yeah, you can't imagine piano life without Beethoven, can you?
No.
No. Okay, that was good.
No,
Sorry it wasn't so light-hearted. In fact, most of this
no.
stuff, yeah. Okay, one pianist, dead or alive, you travel long and far to hear.
Well, more famous as a composer, but he must have been a wonderful pianist, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. I think, because I would be so curious how it was to how he would perform his own pieces. How was the improvisation like, for instance? How much did he put into it? And how did he play? How independent were the two hands, which he talks about in letters, and what was this? What was the style? How did it sound like? I mean, it's so curious.
Yeah, that would be interesting, wouldn't it? Okay, one person you'd love to play for, dead or alive. Doesn't have to be a musician.
Lots, of course. I mean, Arthur Schnabel, who was a famous teacher, in addition to being a great pianist, would be very interesting to play for, because the way we hear how he thought about his feeling of rhythm, pulse, and shapes, phrases, structure. I mean, that would be really, really interesting.
Yeah.
I would love that.
Okay. One concert hall you love playing in. That's a hard one too, isn't it? Because I'm sure there's a lot.
I mean, it would be easy to say, famous halls like the Musikverein or Carnegie Hall, but there are also really wonderful modern halls in the world. I'm mentioning several, like the Philharmonie in Paris, but for instance, in Spain, they a few decades ago they built several wonderful halls, and one of my absolute favorites is in Zaragoza. It is light wood, looking a little bit Nordic in a way, but gorgeous, gorgeous sound. The auditorium in Zaragoza is one of my absolute favorite halls.
Lovely. It's great. And any technical struggles that you have at the piano that you'd like to share with us?
I mean, any pianist who would say they don't have technical
No, a
difficulties
lot of people do divulge.
are simply lying. I mean, of course I am. I mean, and for all the great virtuoso composers wrote for the piano and wrote sometimes incredibly difficult things. And when I hear some young pianists, for instance, play the Ligeti studies or something like that, I think, wow, that's really I could maybe play a couple of them, but it will take me a long time, but yes, of course, I have technical struggles.
Yes, yeah, of
Yes.
course.
Well,
Thank you for being so honest. What would be your advice to an amateur pianist about how to improve?
I think these days, and it's both with amateurs and students and professionals, that everybody wants to play the big pieces. And when I give master classes, I'm sometimes craving for students to come with just some more simple piece, play some Greek lyric pieces or mazurkas of Chopin. Everybody wants to play the first ballade of Chopin or Liszt sonata or Schumann fantasy or Rachmaninoff concertos, and even it's rare that somebody comes with a Mozart concerto.
Yes. That's interesting.
Don't immediately try to play pieces that are more difficult than you can handle. Of course, we all should have dreams and hopes to be playing the big things, but and we should challenge ourselves, but also play things that are manageable and where you can shape phrases without thinking about all the difficult aspects of the piece, and enjoy yourself with the music making. And then so that will be my advice also for amateur pianists. Don't just try to play the big stuff.
Very good advice. Two more to go. One composer you're not quite ready to tackle.
There are several that I haven't played in my life. Actually, funny enough, I've played very little Ravel, Tchaikovsky, Bach. Is a composer that I've played very little of, and I mean, I'm getting to an age where it starts to be a bit ridiculous to say that I will wait another 20 years. So I can't say that, but I, you know, I, life is there, there is life is just so long, and as a for a pianist, there is just so much repertoire to choose. So and Bach for me has not come so naturally, for instance. And maybe it will never be. I mean, I play it sometimes at home, but I don't really play him in concert. So maybe he will have to be my answer. Yeah.
You never know. The beauty about music is you might wake up tomorrow, next week, whatever, and say, I've got to do Bach. You don't know what's around
Maybe,
the corner.
maybe, but maybe just in my practice room.
Yes. Okay. And if you were not a pianist, what do you think you'd be?
I find it hard to think that I would not work with music because it's such a integrated part of my life. So I would probably try to be a conductor.
Okay.
I like teaching, but I'm not, it's not what I'm most passionate about. So
Yes.
hopefully, maybe conducting. Maybe I'll try conducting.
Oh, that sounds great. That's wonderful, Liv, of it. Well, we're getting to the end now, and obviously you're building up to a very busy summer. Yeah, so you're
Well, but summers for me are always mixed because I actually always try to take July mostly off,
okay.
which is very important for me, has become very important for me. I have a family, and it's also important to spend time with them, obviously, with my children and so on, but it's also for myself to have this feeling that, you know, spring can be crazy. I can be traveling and do all this work stuff, but I know that when we get to July, I can breathe again, and I can think about the next season, and I can study certain things for which comes around, and also maybe hopefully take a week completely off or 10
Fantastic.
days ideally, you know. So I always try to have this sort of cycle. But then in August, you're right, then there is a lot, and of course my own festival and things coming up, and
Yeah.
also
Will
now
you
at
be
the
at
end
the,
of
are
the
you at the
season.
proms this summer? I don't think. Are you?
No,
No.
not this summer. No, no.
Okay. Yeah. Other
And
festivals?
I'm playing, yeah, but I actually, it's more what is coming up in September, October when the new season starts for me. I'm doing Brahms Second for the first time again in 15 years, which is a big thing. I'm doing recital program with Opus 111, Schumann Carnival, and big pieces also, which I haven't done for a while. So the
Okay.
summer will be also a study period for me.
Okay. Well, it's been absolutely a pleasure having you here on this podcast.
Thank you. Very
Yeah,
nice to be here.
you're very
Yeah.
welcome, and I'm sure everybody will enjoy listening to your very wise words.
Thank you. I don't know about that, but we'll see.
Oh, Levovi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was great.
Okay.
Thank you.
That was the opening of Liszt's Consolation Number 2, and it was played by Leif Ove Andsnes on his new all-Liszt album Via Crucis from Sony Classical. Pianist podcasts are free, and a really good way to support what we do is by subscribing to Pianist. Visit our website at pianistmagazine.com and listen to us on YouTube by searching Pianist Magazine.